We don't talk about it very much, but we're going to be talking about it today, and that is stewardship. And with me is my good friend, the Reverend Dr. Pastor, you got any other titles? Mark Smith.
Hi, Tom. How you doing? Beautiful day today. I'll tell you, you can't beat this weather, can you?
Yeah.
It is beautiful.
It could be a little cooler.
A little cooler. Well, perhaps.
We had to turn the air conditioning on. Can you imagine that in KFUO?
Is that right?
I've really enjoyed it because the whole year, winter, our gas bills aren't very high at all.
Oh, I know.
No.
Yes.
Yeah, we hardly turn it on much at all. Air conditioning, we got a really good idea I read about. Instead of using our big air conditioning for the whole house, we got a window unit. It was a 220, though. And it cools down about the whole house during the day.
No kidding.
And it's one-third of the cost of a big unit outside.
Can't beat that. You just lose the window, that's all. Can't look out that window.
Well, there's the top part of the window where we can still look out, but it's over our back porch, which is 30 feet in the air, so much to see.
Oh, I see.
But our cat likes lying on there looking out and scaring the squirrels and the birds. And
oh, that cat of yours. He's half lying, let me tell you.
Yeah, he is. He's a Maine Coon, and they can get up to 5 feet long.
He does. He looks like a lion almost.
In the winter, what we do, we put in heaters. I've got
floor heaters?
No, I got one floor heater that does just about the whole downstairs.
Are they pretty safe, though?
Well, who cares? I mean, what's the worst that can happen? And then you go to heaven. Okay, So buy floor heating and get to heaven earlier. Wow. But I got too much to do right now.
Okay.
I don't want to go to heaven right now because I got too many things on my plate.
Too many things on your plate.
Yep, got to get them finished. Yeah, like a White Castle at home, I got to reheat it. So, evangelicals really have a problem with what we're going to be looking at today, and this is a Sunday school lesson, the widow's mite.
The widow's mite.
And we're not talking about that she can lift heavy objects.
No, we're talking about those pennies, or whatever you'd call them, those coins.
Actually, they're less than a penny, if you go in our... Now, I don't know how much it would have bought in those days, even though it says it's less than a penny. But I remember when I was growing up, I could get 3 hard candies for a penny at our little corner store.
Uh-huh.
And they were really hard, you know.
Yeah.
They were good. Today it's one of them for
quarter
3 cents.
For Mary Jane or whatever, yeah.
Yeah, well, Mary Jane, is that a candy bar?
Yeah, that's a candy. You haven't ever had that?
No, I've never had a Mary Jane.
Oh, yeah, they're good.
Yeah, no, I stay with Kit Kat and... What I really like is licorice.
I know you're a big licorice fan.
From the dollar store. They got big box. Now, they got 2 boxes there, one smaller than the other, so make sure you get the bigger one. And they're both a dollar, because they're a lot of times the dollar store. I used to get peanut butter, 6 ounces. Now it's down to 4 ounces at the dollar store. But, it's still a dollar. It's still a pretty good deal. But...
Theology, Tom.
If we're doing principles of life in the Bible, and that's how most people read like Proverbs, as principles of life. In other words, most people think the Bible is all about them and how they are to behave, how they respond to God. Then you really have a big problem with the widow's mite. If you're asking the question, how much should I give to church? And what's the normal percentage most people say?
Oh, I think a lot of people tend to think 10%. That's kind of the traditional tithe, 10%.
Right.
But I think a lot of people cut that in half, maybe 5%. But
my congregation, let's say we bring in $150,000 a year. If everybody gave a tithe, I figured out what it would go to. And what would you imagine?
I would imagine maybe $300,000-$400,000.
No, it came to $22,000 a year.
Oh.
Was all that we would bring in.
No kidding.
Yep.
Well, somebody was really giving generously.
No.
I see. You're figuring in the tithe.
Very good.
By today's standards.
No.
Now, the tithe in the biblical times, of course.
Yes.
That paid for infrastructure and walls and buildings,
and took care of the poor.
Right.
What do we call that today?
We call that income tax and stuff.
Very good, and Social Security.
Yeah. So if you count all that, that's a significant amount.
In fact, right after this hour, I'm visiting my tax people.
Oh.
Downtown, and they're in the KMOX building.
Uh-huh.
So I kind of go down there, and we're going to have a very good conversation.
I'll bet they're looking forward to that.
Oh, yeah. But be that as it may.
So explain this now. Explain this
simple.
To people.
I had very few people that did not already give a tithe to the government in taxes. And so if I insisted that they give only a tithe to God. See, here's where people get mixed up. Giving to the government is also giving to God. Because he's in charge of the government.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, in those days...
Although it's more of a compelled...
No, you can give more if you want. Yeah, remember there's that extra... You can put a dollar in for the presidential thing, and then they were having a discussion about people who are really rich saying that they don't mind being taxed more, and somebody said, well, just give more then. And the government will be only too glad to take that.
Okay.
So the fact of the matter is, though... You were very good. I didn't know if you would know that, but that the tithe is made up of a lot of things that we refer to as Social Security, infrastructure, this sort of thing, back in the days of Moses and company. The fact of the matter is it's also part of the ceremonial laws. So I don't know if you ever use the word tithe. I don't use it any more than I use the word sacrifice.
Right.
Because but all the ceremonial laws are passé. You know, they're no longer to be followed.
They're fulfilled in Christ.
Yes.
He fulfilled them all.
And so we need to find something else to give us insight as to what we need or what we should be giving, say, to church, which is the right-hand kingdom, not including the left-hand kingdom. So that's the first point I wanted to make. These people who are tithers, they're already given a tithe to the government. Very few people don't. Although I just heard something yesterday, is even if you do not make any money, you're still supposed to fill out an income tax form and send it in. Because there's a child credit you can get. And they're discovering that a lot of illegal immigrants... in the country are filling it out and getting money from the IRS because they're not checked as to whether or not they're really bona fide people here. You know, it's kind of interesting. But be that as it may, to give to the church, I think I'm a really good law and gospel teacher, and I do that all the time in adult instruction. But boy, sometimes God comes through and shows me I'm not as good as I think. I had finished, I think this with this lady was 20 to 24 weeks, and there were a number of others there. And we don't give out offering envelopes until you become a member.
Yes, I know you're very strict on that.
Because
you see it as a privilege.
Very well said, yes.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a responsibility. And now, if somebody wants to be coming and you know they're going to be a member and they ask for it, then I don't make a big deal. But
you don't give it just to friends of the congregation. You don't give offering envelopes just to friends that don't necessarily want to join, but they want to give from time to time. And
well, if we have a project or something, we'll take that, like a building fund or something like that. But to get the envelopes with your name on them and the numbers, that's a privilege to give to the Lord. And so I hand them out at the last adult instruction class once the people decide they're going to join. And like I say, I think I'm a pretty good law and gospel preacher. And there was a lady sitting there, and she looked at me, and she got the envelope. She says, Pastor, will you tell us how much we have to give? And why was I sad to hear that?
Because she was getting, she had concluded that it's still what you do yourself.
What you, how much?
How much you can give?
No, no. She
is
asked,
what makes you a member.
How much do I have to give?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, how much do I have to give?
So, what's the answer to that?
Nothing.
That's right.
Yeah, Christ has given it all.
And I looked at her and I said, "Well, if you're asking that question, the answer is, as Mark Smith says, nothing." Oh, well, you want the envelopes back? She said.
She did. Huh?
No, no. I made that part up. And so she says, "I don't understand." And so we went through the widow's mite, which I've done a series of difficult Bible passages, like if you don't forgive, God won't forgive you, and all kinds like that. This is one of the most difficult Bible passages in the Bible, because commonsensical Christianity will really get you messed up when you're reading that. Because here's my question. What percentage did she give of her money?
Oh, 100%.
Yes.
Jesus says she gave all that she had.
That's exactly correct. So, these individuals who like reading the Bible as principles to live by, I always throw that at them. Okay, well, according to the widow's mite, you're supposed to give 100%. Are you meeting that? Well, no. Well, then, what are you talking about? That the Bible is the responsibility of following it in order to be right with God. You see, there are parts of the Bible where it's pretty clear it's talking about behavior. Like, we're supposed to be kind to the neighbor, and if somebody comes in church and one person is rich and the other is poor, you don't make better advances to the rich person. You know, that's James.
Right.
So there's plenty in the Bible, and what use of the law is that, where God is giving us a guideline?
Oh, that's the rule.
That's right.
Or roadmap.
And so the first use is to the government. The
curb.
Yeah, the second use is to the Christian to make them aware.
As a mirror for God's law.
Right, and the third is as a guide or a rule. So it's kind of interesting. Somebody once said this, that they would not have any questions in heaven because they'll know all things when they get to heaven. And I said, no, only God's omniscient. You're not. But what the process is for learning more or not, I'm not going to speculate. But the fact of the matter I was trying to tell them is that you're not really sure what kind of life we're going to have in heaven. You know, I can't even imagine it. You know, on the one hand, who would ever want to leave a Bible study led by Jesus?
That's right.
But on the other hand, who would ever want to leave a buffet from Jesus? You know, so I'm going to have a hard problem. I just hope they're not at the same time. So, yeah, you know they got movie shows now where you can actually eat a meal while you're watching the movie.
Goodness sake.
That is really smart. In other words, instead of a chair, it's a chair with a kind of a table that goes over it, and you can order, and people bring you food. And you know, it's bad enough having somebody behind you chomping on popcorn all the way through the whole meal.
You're going to have to watch where you sit from now on. If you get up for any reason, you have to watch as you don't sit into a lump of spaghetti or something like that.
Well, yes. Yeah.
I guess you just don't get up from your chair.
Well, I don't know. I was just being told this from somebody recently, and it's kind of interesting. But back to the point we're trying to make here with the widow's mite. What would you say is the main point of the widow's mite? In fact, why don't we read it? Because it's not that long, and there are probably people riding in the car, and they may not have, you know, known of this or heard of it. Mark 12, 41 to 44. Why don't you go ahead on that?
And he sat down opposite the treasury and watched the people putting money into the offering box. Many rich people put in large sums, and a poor widow came and put in 2 small copper coins, which make a penny. And he called his disciples to him and said to them, truly I say to you, this poor widow has put in more than all those who are contributing to the offering box. For they all contributed out of their abundance, but she, out of her poverty, has put in everything she had, all she had to live on.
Now, you know, I really find this interesting because you're always supposed to look at the context. And how many times do people realize, do you know what the verse right before this is? It's verse 40. And what are the first few words of verse 40 of Mark chapter 12, Mark?
Who devour widows' houses.
Yeah, isn't that interesting?
Yeah, right.
And then we have the story. You see, a lot of people don't understand that the Gospels are not necessarily in chronological order.
No.
They're written sometimes in chronological order, obviously. You know, he was born first and this kind of thing. But sometimes they're in theological order. And I can just see Mark writing this and talking about devouring widows' houses. And then he remembers about this widow that had occurred, and the event that had occurred, and maybe he just puts the two together. So it's important that the Bible isn't in chronological order all the time. Even the words from the cross,
There's a little bit of yellow.
I was talking to you because you had a different word, or it was a pastor I was talking to just recently.
There is sometimes a little bit of confusion on those words, partly because there's a hymn that I think there used to be a hymn,
yeah,
I think, in
is.
The old hymnal that would turn them around and cause a little confusion.
Oh, right now we're singing the hymn every Wednesday night at Grace Wellsville. And we use three verses each time, depending on the word. Mm-hmm. And they did have it in the correct order.
Mm-hmm.
That hymn was kind of interesting. But at least nobody starts off with, "It is finished."
That's right.
Yeah. I mean, some of it is kind of obvious. The first one almost everybody does is, "Father, forgive them, for they know not what they do." But and then when did he say to his mother, "Who knows?" And you would think that the thief was later on in the words. You know, "Remember me when you come into your kingdom," because Jesus would have had to say some things. But you're correct. There's nowhere in the Bible, particularly since the only words we have from the cross, the seven of them, are found in four different Gospels.
Right.
No one of them has all of them.
Mm-hmm.
A couple of them have both, or two of them. But at any rate, that's really interesting. Jesus is speaking against the scribes. He said to them in his teaching, "Beware of the scribes who desire to go around in long robes, love greetings in the marketplace, the best seats in the synagogues, the best places at feasts, who devour widows' houses, and for a pretense make long prayers." And then you could say, "and also give a lot of money." You could have added that, because that's the very next thing. "These will receive greater condemnation." Boy, if that isn't a way of reversing law and gospel on people today, you would think that those who have law and prayers, that they would be looked up to by God. But no. He says, "and for a pretense," because they want to be thought of as more spiritual than others. Now, here's a question. I talked to a pastor out of Illinois last night about this, and he made a point I never heard before. Did the widow give this money before she went in or after? In other words, was it before or after the worship service?
I'd be inclined to think after.
Yes.
I would.
Now, there's nothing in the text to say that. But, liturgically, when do we always take the offering?
It's a response.
To what?
It's a response to the gospel.
Specifically.
To the sermon.
Yes, to the sermon, yeah.
Which hopefully is the gospel.
Well, law and gospel.
Right.
Yeah, but ending on law.
Right.
Ending on gospel, yes, you're correct. And
You sure wouldn't take the offering at the beginning of the service. I mean, that would be unusual.
Yes. Sometimes
there's no rule against it, but
no.
But you take the offering as a response.
And I think that's really good. There's a number of responses. First of all, "create in me" is a response to the sermon. The offering is, and then taking the Lord's Supper is a response to the sermon. So in my sermons, I've got a number of ingredients that I always try and put in, but two of them are baptism and the Lord's Supper. Thanking him for the baptism and looking forward to the Lord's Supper. In fact, where I'm preaching next, they have three services Saturday and two on Sunday. The Saturday and the Sunday morning, the early one, are communion, but the late one is not. So sometimes you got to change the sermon. I was in one and I thought we were having communion. I was telling them, "Boy, I bet you're all looking forward to what we're about to do." And I turned around, there's nothing
there's
on the
no
altar.
Communion. that's one of those embarrassing moments.
Well, I don't think anyone.
How did you get out of that?
Well, this was kind of. I don't think anybody.
Can we have the altar guild come up here immediately, please?
Oh yeah. Well, I almost had to do that with baptism. I told you what had happened in one of my baptisms, and what happened there was that the little baby kind of threw up into the baptismal font, and when that happened, boy, I tell you, we had to change some water for sure. So, we're talking about the widow's mite here, and we're kind of taking a look at the importance of this for stewardship. I believe stewardship is one of the most difficult things to talk about and to preach on. I've rarely heard a stewardship sermon that's not legalistic.
Yeah, I would agree. There's a lot of...
I mean, how many times have you heard God loves a cheerful giver, you know, in a stewardship sermon? And then I always...
Well, of course, he loves us even when we're not cheerful.
Well, so he doesn't love you when you're not cheerful?
What that passage is saying, of course, don't you agree, is that God wants us to give freely, gladly.
Yeah, the word love
not
there,
under duress.
The word love there really should be translated appreciates. He loves a giver who is cheerful in his giving rather than one who says, oh, I got to do this again.
Yeah, no, who wants that kind of a gift?
Yeah, yeah. Well, God will still take it, or the pastor will. Yeah, I said that at a congregation when somebody told me, well, God loves a cheerful giver. And I said, oh, does the accounting team go through and take all the money out from people who weren't cheerful that day?
That doesn't.
You take it all. And, of course, evangelicals, you hear this on the radio all the time. The more you give, the more...
The more you get.
Yes. Yeah. Which is found nowhere in the Bible. You know, on the basis, as though we can manipulate God to get more.
But you hear a lot of televangelists saying
that. Yeah, the purpose-driven life doctrine. Individual right now is making a big point that the reason you don't get blessings is because you're not obedient enough. Which is really interesting. I hate to,
it's really
to be his
law and gospel.
Well, it's I hate to be his kid. You're not going to bless me, Dad, unless I'm obedient. So that means I don't eat, you know, I don't have a bed to sleep in, I don't have any clothes to wear. I mean, even when we're talking about God in that sense, what I find amazing is the God that they have is worse than any abusive parent. I mean, you wouldn't want a parent like this God is. But boy, they don't have any trouble saying that God isn't blessing you simply because you're not obedient enough. Now, that may be working for Mormonism or the Islamic faith or Judaism, but it sure doesn't work for Christianity. It's a horrible confusion between the law and the gospel. So, what we're doing is getting close then as to whether or not this answers the question as to how much should we give to church, if anything. There's no doubt that verse 43 gives the impression that she gave more than everybody else who put into the treasury. But we know that can't be true because they gave more than pennies. So the only way you can think that is true is by percentages. Percentage-wise, nobody
gave all
near.
She had.
Yeah, 100%. And I have never seen that on a, you know, they'll send out little charts with percentages. If you make 20,000, 5% is this, 6%, 10%. I've never seen 100%.
No, yeah. Obviously.
No, but that's what the Bible
says. That's what she gave.
So are we going to believe the Bible, or is there something else going on here, and we're going to show what that something else is? By the way, we haven't even done this, but if anybody would like to phone, numbers are 505-7850, toll-free 1-800-730-2727. Although the point of this is really not stewardship, there still is a point for stewardship. And I think what you're going to find here is one of the best criteria that God provides us for knowing how much to give. And we'll talk about that when we get back from the break. I'm Tom Baker. Numbers are 505-7850. Or long distance,
1-800-730-2727.
And please stay with us through the break.
New constitution in Hungary cheers pro-lifers, shocks others.
This is a special commentary from the Susan B. Anthony List. named for the suffragette who was proudly pro-life.
A new constitution in Hungary, which took effect earlier this year, gives unapologetic support for unborn human life. It states, human dignity is inviolable. Everyone has the right to life and human dignity. The life of a fetus will be protected from conception. The document goes on to ban human trafficking, torture, cloning, and eugenics. Pro-abortion groups such as Amnesty International and the EU have voiced loud disapproval for the new constitution. Hungary has seen very low birth rates in the last few years, which may account for the government's pro-family push.
This is Marjorie Dannenfelser, president of the Susan B. Anthony List. To join us in our battle for life, visit our website at sba-list.org.
AMA 50 KFUO is underwritten in part by Reliable Heating and Cooling, with a showroom in the Mid-County Trade Center, 8463 Delport Drive. Reliable Heating and Cooling features Lennox air conditioning and furnace systems and services all brands. Reliable also provides senior discounts. Reliable Heating and Cooling, serving you from North, Mid, and West County exchanges. The next time you call Reliable at 423-3535, please thank them for being an AMA 50 KFUO underwriter.
How do you raise your boys to be godly leaders when the world is telling them to do otherwise? On the next Focus on the Family, prepare yourself for the spiritual battle of raising godly young men and learn what roadblocks you can expect. Encouragement to rise to the challenges in your family and your faith on the next Focus on the Family with Jim Daly.
Weekdays at 9:30 on KFUO Radio.
The way man communicates has changed radically over the centuries. What went from shouting across a field to throwing a stone to maybe tying a note to an arrow became radio. And that became KFUO Radio, and the gospel went global. Now we've entered the age of new media. KFUO is there as well. Like us on Facebook. If you follow us, you'll get announcements, program audio, staff photos. Everything you want to know about KFUO is available on the Facebook page. KFUO Radio on Facebook. Like us today.
How would you like to give a gift to KFUO Radio and a gift to your children at the same time? Wondering how that could be possible? Well, it's easy, and our trained staff of gift planning specialists can show you how. Many have benefited from this prudent method of estate planning, and we do all the work to set it up for you. Give us a call and find out how you can benefit KFUO Radio with your legacy gift.
Call Joan Harwell at 800-844-0524. That's 800-844-0524.
Has your marriage lost that spark that you used to enjoy? I'm John Fuller with Focus on the Family Minute, and Pam Farrell has a helpful reminder that every couple needs to connect on many different levels.
We like to think of red hot monogamy like the diamond ring that many people have for their wedding ring. I mean, a diamond has many facets to it, and in the same way, intimacy has many facets to it. There's social intimacy and financial intimacy and recreational intimacy and vocational and parental and emotional and spiritual intimacy. If you're fighting over money, there's not going to be a lot of red hot monogamy going on. And if you're not on the same page with your kids and your parenting, chances are those fires are going to be cooled. And so to fan the flame, to add that spark and that sizzle, we want to look at all sides of intimacy.
You'll find trusted resources to help you identify and address the many facets of intimacy at focusonthefamily.com/marriage.
And the numbers here on Law and Gospel are 5057850 and
1-800-730-2727.
And remember, in 1 hour after our program, Issues Etc. is on for the second time this.
Oh, great.
Yes, so
great program.
Great program, and we're really
glad to have them back.
Yep. And so they got some great subjects too. Very, very interesting. All righty. The widow's mite. Now we get down to brass tacks. This is really, really difficult to understand if you're going to use this on the basis of figuring out how much. I use the widow's mite to decide what I give the church.
I told you last week you used that same text to preach my installation sermon at my first parish.
Really?
Yes.
Wow.
It was entitled The Mighty Mites.
Oh,
I can remember it.
The Mighty Mites.
The Mighty Mites.
Well, I've been on this kick for a while, and you have to approach it from a law and gospel point of view. So I always start off with a statement that really sounds ridiculous. And I'm all set for Pastor Smith. Oh, you're going to have to explain that one, Pastor Baker. And the statement is this: Jesus never criticizes someone only for sin, nor does he compliment anybody because of a good work. Do I have to explain that?
No, because I remember he criticizes unbelief. That's what he criticizes.
Exactly. It's not the sin that's the real problem. It's always the unbelief behind that. I remember when I first came to the Sen, they always had one of the professors talk about theology a bit. The gentleman's name was Dr. Bertram. And I got to really like his law and gospel stuff. There was no doubt about it. But one of the things he was talking about is the levels of sin. What you think sin is then leads you to decide how to get rid of it or how to overcome it. The first one is really kind of obvious that all religions agree with. Sin, by definition, is a disobedience against God's will. And if that's where they stop, then what happens is all they're teaching is how to be obedient. And the more obedient you are, the more God is pleased with you. Remember that story I was telling you about when I had the bad leg and the physical therapist was telling me, well, you know, good people go up to heaven and bad people go down to hell. I said, I'm sorry, I'm a Lutheran pastor. We believe bad people go to heaven. So the fact of the matter is that politically correct Christianity is just awash in this country everywhere. And that's really what we're fighting against. And our lay people think this way because it's just the natural way of thinking. It's the way the old Adam thinks. Bertram went on and said, behind every disobedience, there is always an unbelief in a promise. And that's really good to know. In fact, that's how we accuse people of sinning. Not just because they do something wrong, but they don't believe a promise. Like, I'm driving down the street, the highway, and I see a car off to the side with the trunk open, and about a half a mile down, you see a guy rolling a tire. You know, he had a flat tire. And as I stop there and look, there's a toolbox in the trunk. So he's not there. He doesn't see me. I take it. I steal it. Yes, that's disobedience, but what promise don't I believe?
You don't believe that God will provide you with tools as you need them.
Exactly. So that behind every sin is a form of unbelief, a non-trust in a promise from Him. In other words, here's what you're really saying when you take those tools. God, I see those tools there, and in my opinion, I'm going to correct your mistake. You gave it to this gentleman. They really belong to me. And so I would appreciate your thanks for correcting your mistake. I mean, make it as blunt as you can.
That's really as brazen as we are.
That's really how we are. Now, we don't recognize that.
No.
Remember what the point of every sermon? You are being taught how to think like God thinks. So that you see this on television every now and then. Everybody loves Raymond. The wife isn't that good a cook. And
lemon chicken.
Yeah, lemon chicken. All the time. So he takes a bite and, oh, is this good? She turns away and he puts it in his pocket.
Yeah, I remember one time they had a flashback to when they first met and she says, I've got some lemon chicken. Would you like to share it with
me? Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
And he was eating and said, yes, I think I could eat this the rest of my life.
Yeah, exactly.
And he did.
Yeah, he did. But we see as an audience all this background stuff, how the old Adam works. And, of course, they don't. I mean, most people aren't aware of the extent of your sin, that you're really spitting at the face of Jesus while he's still on the cross. That's what sin is. So I thought that was pretty good. So every time I talk about sin, I try and show the lack of trust in a promise. Now, isn't that interesting? If the problem is disobedience, then the religion tries to get you to what?
Obey.
Yeah. If the problem, though, is really unbelief, what corrects it?
Belief.
Yes. And that's what Christianity is. We're saved. You know, it wasn't the apple on the tree that ruined the pair of them.
No, it was the desire to have something that God
exactly.
had forbidden them to have.
So the sin had
she,
occurred.
She already committed the sin even before she took the fruit.
So it was her motivation and her desire. But Bertrand went on, and he said, you know, there's one commandment you break every time you sin, no matter what you do.
Unbelief.
Well, which commandment?
The first one.
Very
Thou
good.
Shalt have
yeah.
no other gods before me.
And this was his final level. He said, when a sin occurs, it's either disobedience that's corrected with obedience, or it's unbelief that could be corrected with faith, or it's actually a form of idolatry. You're replacing God. And that's corrected by Jesus. See, Jesus is the one who corrects our idolatry or offsets it with his death on the cross so our sins can be forgiven. We are not going to heaven because God uses Jesus and the Holy Spirit to change us, although that happens. But the change is always due to the fact that we're on our way to heaven first. You know, it's just a totally different way of thinking. So now we bring that law gospel paradigm, and I like thinking of it as a paradigm, where you take law and gospel. In fact, I'm going to be doing a webinar on this where I'm going to have some principles of law and gospel, and then we fit them on various passages. So let's fit it on this widow's mite passage. Regardless of what the sin was, what we want to do is figure out what precisely is there about the widow that Jesus is complimenting. And if we're using this distinction between law and gospel, then he must be complimenting her for believing something. And he must be criticizing the others for not believing something. You see, if you get stuck with verse 43, you won't figure it out. Jesus says to the disciples, "Assuredly I say to you that the poor widow has put in more than all those who have given to the treasury." Now, if you stop there, then it's simply because she's done a higher percentage. And your lesson, therefore, was try and get the highest percentage you can of your income. But that's not the point. Listen to the next verse. "For they all put in out of their abundance, but she out of her poverty put in all that she had, her whole livelihood." Now, that is a totally different reason for complimenting her. Where is the faith in her? Where is the unbelief in them? It's actually easier to find the unbelief in them. You have so much money, and you are to, of course, give some to the church. But you make sure that you're taken care of first. And then you only give out of your abundance. And so when the Pharisees did this, Mark, and only gave from their abundance, not from what they thought they needed, what promise weren't they believing?
when the Pharisees gave from their abundance.
Yeah.
Well, they were breaking the first commandment because they trusted in themselves more than in God.
Exactly. So the promise is, God says, I will never leave you nor forsake you. I will never give you a snake when you ask for a fish, or a rock when you ask for a loaf of bread. Those are the promises. They couldn't confide in God. They were just like the Israelites. After going through the Red Sea, you would never think they would ever doubt God, but immediately they doubted him because they didn't have any bread. Then they got manna. Then they didn't have any water. Then they got water.
They didn't have any meat.
Then they got all those birds. They were never, never satisfied. And you almost see the percentage of those who weren't. Because if you go to the Promised Land, how many of the 12 tribes were faithful?
Only, of
the 12 spies.
Well, only two.
That's right.
Remained.
So 2 of 12, that's less than about 15%. And that's probably what they were at with the people also. Because when they came back, they said, no, we don't want to go fight these giants. They lost their trust in God. So, and here's the main point for this hour. Jesus is not complimenting the widow because she gave money. He's not complimenting the widow because she gave more than the rest. He's complimenting the widow because she's the only one who had
faith.
Very good. Yes. Nobody else needed it because they kept enough for them, so they had no need to trust God to take care of them. The widow gave everything. So here's how I work this into a criterion as to how much to give to church. I take a look at how much I'm bringing in, wages, salaries, so forth. I figure out how much I think I need, the basic, and then I see what's left over, and whatever's left over, I just go over that amount in order to have to trust God. In other words...
So you force yourself to put more trust in God, right?
Because I'm giving more than I can afford.
Uh-huh.
For some people in my congregation, one gentleman was up to $500 a week. And I had one lady who was up to $3.25 a week. That's all she could afford. Actually, she could only afford $3, so she gave $3.25. And this can change from week to week. Particularly somebody who's self-employed, you don't have a set amount coming in.
What do you think about some of these ministries that they have it automatically taken out of your checking account? What do you think of that sort of thing?
I have no problem with that. And for my old Adam, that would be really a good idea. In fact, we're trying to look into that. I actually want them to take it out of the credit card, because we get money back every time we spend money on the credit card.
Yeah, I don't see any real problem with it, but don't you think it may deny us, particularly if you need that weekly exercise of...
You mean the offering plate goes by you don't put something in it?
Yeah, I mean, don't you think it's kind of...
Okay, I used to think that until I realized something, and you should talk to your accounting team. The vast majority of my members paid a monthly check. They did not pay a weekly check.
Well, that's what I do, in fact.
Well, then you don't give something.
No, not every week, no. But every month.
Well, whether you give it through the credit card or through... Well, what are you talking about?
Well, I don't know.
You're up at the altar. You don't give anything. Would you come down and say, well,
no,
here's
I make the check out and I put it in the offering envelope and put it in another time.
What other time are you not at the altar?
Well, I may not put it in then, but I'll make sure that the finance committee gets it.
Yeah. It's too bad your wife doesn't go to the same church, because she could put it in. Okay. does she ever put it in?
No, I write the checks.
That's a song. Oh. I write the checks.
I don't write all of them. She writes some of them.
Well, she has to when she
sure.
goes grocery shopping
sure.
for you and stuff. Oh, yeah. That's a... if you want to phone at 505-7850 or...
1-800-730-2727.
And we're going to be talking to our good friend, Wes Reimnitz. Hi, Wes.
Hey, how are you?
Very good. I'm glad you waited till we were pretty well done.
I thought maybe I could get the last word in.
Go ahead. This is Pastor Reimnitz over in Illinois, folks, and I've had him on my program a number of times, and we're looking forward to he might be one of the pastors on Ruminations coming up. But what have you got to share with us today, Wes?
Well, you know, you were talking about how you taught your folks to give. I go about it in a different fashion.
Well, goodbye. Go ahead, tell us.
I just finished with an adult confirmation class, and we plan on confirming this coming Sunday.
Uh-huh.
We talk about it in terms of joyous and freest giving in response to what Christ has done for us in our lives and having brought us to faith.
Uh-huh.
So it's not necessarily, I take a look at what I have. Of course, I teach them the budget, and I think that's one of the things, comments you were making, is they need to take a look at their budget.
You mean the church
and
budget?
Then, no, their own budget.
Oh, their own budget, yeah.
Oh, no. I teach them that the last thing you give to is the church budget. The first thing you give, and I think you've been bringing that point out very good in this hour, is it's in response to what Christ has done. You talked about it,
yes,
in terms of the gospel response to the sermon, and I thought that was excellent, you know. I think, I don't know if a Lutheran pastor would disagree with you on that, you know, or layman.
Wes was the gentleman I was talking to last night who suggested that she gave the mite after she left the worship service.
Yeah, I would agree on that, sure.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's where Pastor Smith and I think are on the same. Because where was she? She was in the temple, heard the prayers, saw the sacrifices, a reminder that one day the Messiah would come and die for her.
Yeah, that's right. And therefore it was a response because of the gospel.
Yes, and I think one of the other things is in the New Testament, all it talks about is generous giving. It doesn't talk about how much you should give or the amounts that you should give.
How would you define generous giving?
I think there's something each individual, and that's what I teach them to sit down, and whether it's 1, 2, 3% because of what they've got their lifestyle in. I think God expects us to get our own life budget into order. And you know, like I've taught them, what's 10% of nothing? It's nothing, right?
Yep.
They could be at that point in life where they're unable to do that.
Yeah.
And I've seen others where when they die, they give it all to the church, to the seminary, to mission outreach.
Yeah, that's correct, too. Yes. So, KFUO. You know,
yes, KFUO would... Yes, we had a very sizable gift here a number of years ago that came out of Central Illinois for KFUO.
Excellent.
You know, but I like to think of it as you sit down and say, "Boy, how much can I now give to the Lord?" And I would say to you, take it to that next level. How can I take it to the next level as I get my life in order and grow in my giving? You know. And I think that growing and giving comes back to what you were talking about earlier, that he gave out of faith.
Yes.
And you mentioned in that component part to your sermon, so baptism and Lord's Supper. And that's something, you know, having listened to you a number of years, I do the same thing every Sunday in my sermon, that how do we grow in the means of grace, the Word, the baptism, the Lord's Supper.
Right. Anything, Pastor Smith, you want to ask him?
No, I'll tell you what. I think everything he said is very good. I agree with him 100%.
You actually do some work in the area of stewardship, don't you? You've written some stuff on it, Wes?
Well, I used to be the Central Illinois District stewardship person.
Uh-huh.
And did quite a few studies on that, and I would say everything you were talking about today was spot on match. You came at it a whole different way than I did, but you know, it's just so joyous. It's a lot of fun if you realize that first it's my giving to my Lord Jesus Christ,
right?
And it's in response to what he's done. And as you talked about earlier, the gospel response to that sermon. There was we once had a stewardship program in our district called 10 for 10. 10 weeks, tithing at 10%.
Hmm.
Pastor came up and said to me, he says, I had a member that absolutely refuses to go along with the program. Very adamant about that. And I said, well, what was the problem? He said his giving would have to go down.
Yeah.
And he wasn't about to do that. He was a 20, 25, 30%er.
Wow.
Had made his fortune.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, he was always looking for ways to give it away to the Lord.
Well, my phone number is... Oh, you said to the Lord. Excuse me. Okay.
Yeah. Well, you know, he did give, I know that he did once give a gift to KFUO for LCMS missions and our district missions and to his church. I mean, there was a variety of things. His pastor just kept giving him lists of places that he could give it away to, and he would.
Yeah, that's wonderful. Hey, we really appreciate the call. Thank you so
much,
Wes.
Good talking to you, Wes.
Bye. Yeah, good talking to you. Bye.
All righty, bye. Yes. Wes, I've actually received materials from him, so I get some of my insights. The other person that's helped me a lot is a professor who used to be at Fort Wayne Seminary. His name is James Bullhagen. And he was actually interviewed here on KFUO about the tithe. And that's where I got this information also, that if everybody gave a tithe, your giving would go way down, because you're already giving a tithe to God through the government.
That's really interesting.
Yeah, and so it's kind of...
I don't think a lot of people realize that.
Oh, of course
that,
they don't.
That the giving, the tithe in the days of Jesus and before that was, you know, that's where all the infrastructure, building of the, you know, the temple buildings and upkeep and all that was taken out of that tithe.
And the Pharisees were well known about actually helping out widows and such, and that's where they got this from. Actually, if you go to the Old Testament, for special offerings, they often went beyond the tithe. But it was very, very interesting.
This is a special test of the emergency alert system. The National Weather Service has initiated the annual Missouri Tornado Drill. This drill includes all cities and counties in Missouri. Emergency managers, law enforcement agencies, amateur radio networks, and other severe storm spotter groups should test their severe weather procedures and communication lines. This test is designed to evaluate emergency communications procedures and disaster preparedness plans throughout the metro region. If there was an actual tornado, you would be instructed to go to a safe place. At this time, please review tornado safety rules and know where the best tornado shelter is in your home, at your school, or at your place of business.
Closed, yeah. Yeah, sad to see him go.
I bet.
It's a good store.
Yeah, in fact, I was looking for a book and I had to go to Amazon.com. The only place to get it. But we'll maybe see you back Thursday for Ruminations.
Great.
Okay. Until then, Tom Baker, Mark Smith, thank you so much for listening. And remember, 1 hour from now, Issues Etc. Till tomorrow, God bless.
Listen to Law and Gospel weekdays at 3 p.m. on KFUO Radio. You can write Pastor Tom at KFUO Radio, 85 Founders Lane, St. Louis, Missouri, 63105. Or email lawgospel@lawgospel.com. Law and Gospel is archived for your listening convenience at KFUO.org.